Yeah, what liquor does carrot juice pair well with?
Nothing. I mean, what kind of question is that?
No, you have very adventurous beverage choices. Like, I buy water and Perrier and Snapple, so, you know, that's about it.
Oh, no, all the adventurous liquor stuff stopped a very long time ago, because it only takes a couple of attempts to, like, put apple juice in something before you realize, no, some things you just don't mess with. You just make what God intended.
It's like all I had was rum and a Capri Sun. It didn't go well.
That actually sounds delicious.
That sounds awful.
I do have some sort of really apple terrible. Liqueur that I bought an entire bottle of to try one recipe and then never used again somewhere. Yeah. I don't know what it's called.
So I quit drinking earlier this year. Like, not that I had, like, that sounds worse than it is. Like, I'm not an AA. But I was like, you know what? Like, I just felt like it was time to give it up. And it does make traveling a lot cheaper. So, like, super, like, first world problem. Like, oh, WWDC is expensive. But it is. And, like, but if you don't buy booze, it's way cheaper. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a...
So I have a Gatorade tonight.
What color Gatorade are you?
This is blue, which is disgusting, but it's the only thing that I had. So
I find that there are generally two camps of Gatorade people. There are red people and yellow people.
I'm a yellow person. It's not about race. I just don't like red people.
Mm.
Oh God. Oh God.
Yeah, I live with a red person. I was historically a yellow person. I kind of bounce back and forth from time to time, but you know.
I mean, whatever floats your boat. I'm not here to judge you.
A boat floating in Gatorade.
It'd be sticky.
Sounds like a disaster. No, I'm a yellow person, and I used to be a white Powerade person. You know, the cloudy, whatever that one was. Yeah. Oh man,
this dovetails perfectly with your terrible description of drinking Diet Pepsi when you woke up in the morning.
Oh
no, Diet Coke. Diet Pepsi is like poison. Well, I mean, it's more poison. It's poison,
exactly
poison.
The same.
Yeah.
Wait, are you one of those people who claim to tell the difference between Coke and Pepsi?
Yes.
What? You can't tell the difference? Okay, so let me tell you a story. So I'm from the South. I don't know if you guys could tell that from the accent, but like I could see Arkansas from my office, and my house is like 5 minutes away from Mississippi. It's very exciting. And so Coke, like Coke itself, like Coca-Cola Coke, is kind of based in Atlanta, Georgia, but they have a big bottling factory actually in Memphis, like 10 minutes from my house. I got to drive past it on my way to work. So Memphis is a Coke town. Like, you cannot, unless you're at some like weird fast food place, like you cannot find Pepsi at like a small, like local place. It's everything is Coke because it's just here and it's cheap for them to ship it, I guess. And, but I prefer Pepsi. Like, I'm an outsider. I'm a stranger and an alien in my own land.
Is because it's foreign and exotic to you?
Yeah, it's very fancy.
It's your rebellious instincts.
That's right. Yeah, I dropped whiskey and went picked up the Pepsi. But there's definitely a difference.
Yeah.
And Pepsi is sweeter, I will say that. Like, but I prefer it.
Well, I like wild cherry Pepsi more than I like cherry Coke, but I don't like regular Pepsi at all. So there's that. And then, of course, where do you come down on Mr. Pibb and Dr. Pepper?
Dr. Pepper all the way. Mr. Mm-hmm. Pibb didn't even finish school. What a joke.
Ah.
What kind of doctor is Dr. Pepper?
I like to think that he's a doctor in the same way that Dr. Dre is a doctor.
I was going to go with a very sadistic dentist.
Well, it's where it ends up if you drink too much because your teeth fall out.
Well,
that's just the parent in me speaking.
It's more like a sadistic Dr. Drang, because then it's about fracture points in your teeth as the acid crumbles it.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets you coming and going. He sells you the device to ruin the teeth, and then he fixes them for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And then blogs about it late at night.
Speaking of poison, in our wonderful movie this evening, French fries...
Is it wonderful?
Labeled as a poison.
Yes, poison.
You're putting poison in your body, Waz.
Yeah.
I can't eat fruit like you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
He should have said ketchup is made from tomatoes, which are a fruit. So there.
So here's my... So I guess we're jumping in.
that was my usual segue bomb, where I just like sort of throw it over the fence and then see what happens.
I was going to try and segue with Perrier because he uses that for the toast, but we went right past that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the nerd in me freaks out when he toasts on the Mac. It's like, liquid. that I have one of those machines. It has vents. Like, so this movie, what in the world? Like, okay. So I hadn't seen it in a while. And, it's not as good as I remember it.
No, I have to agree.
When this suggestion came about, I thought it was because you really liked this movie and that's why you wanted to talk about it.
I think that I thought I liked this movie. And like, I don't know. It's fine. It's just, it suffers from like poor acting and some weird, edits. And like Steve Ballmer is talking to a picture frame at some point. Like, I don't know.
There are a great many, many problems with this. First of which is probably the year they made it. 1999 is not really the best year to make this movie, you know, cause in your plot, it just kind of stops.
Yeah. Jobs is back. The iMac is out, depending on what, when in 1999 it is.
Maybe they thought that was a big enough point that they could, you know.
I guess. It's a TV movie, too. I'd forgotten that. Yeah. It was for TNT. Like,
I remember watching it on TNT when it first came out in June, apparently. I forgot the month and I had to look it up. But in June of 1999.
You were like so six. Come
I
on.
Was 16. So I obviously had terrible taste because I really liked it.
You were 16 in 1999?
Yeah.
Oh, you're older than me.
Oh, yeah.
This is weird. Anyways,
well,
please continue.
See, that's one of those things where we're older, but we're not grown-ups. So it is a good thing
that
you're
thing.
Here.
That thing again. It's just, it's cheesy, right?
Oh, like super cheese.
And so here's my problem. So this is what I have. So I told you guys earlier, I have 7 pages of notes. So this is my field notes notebook, and it's, that's the
part. Oh, good. I was worried it was like 8.5 by 11 sheets, and then we would be really in trouble.
No, I'm a hipster, so I've got a pocket notebook. So here's my theory that I have come with tonight, and I want to see what you two fine gentlemen think of my theory. It's two parts, and part one feeds into part two. So you guys get PowerPoint open. We're gonna make a flowchart. One is like any movie about Apple has to have certain things in it. So, you know, things like acid. Things like the Pepsi, you know, selling sugar water quote, insanely great, you know, the Are You a Virgin interview, like, and this movie did the same thing the Jobs movie did, which was out, what, like 2 years ago, which is terrible. Like, have me back and we can talk about that movie.
I watched it last night because I wanted additional context. And then I went to bed and confused the two movies in my head. So I had to watch Pirates of Silicon Valley again this morning.
Yeah, but like both of those movies, that like Jobs says like the sugar water quote and the music's like, do-do-do-do, like, this is important. So every Apple movie has to do those things. And I think why it bothers me is that because movies about your real life heroes are never good.
Yeah, we're doomed from the start talking about this movie because we don't have John Syracuse to correct us on every little bit of factual evidence in this movie. But yeah, like the things they leave out and the things they add in are, especially on the Microsoft side in this movie, the things they put in here about Bill Gates are just mind-boggling at times. I have so many notes about just the way that they treated the characters in general. And just sort of like my overarching feeling is this movie thinks that Microsoft won hands down because Bill is the richest man in the world and Woz now, quote, teaches computers, whatever the hell that means.
Yes, it's computers need to learn too. Don't be discriminatory.
Right. But like Jobs is this really like deeply conflicted character in the movie where when his personal life goes awry, he takes that out on Apple and the people in the office. Like it's not that this is really his personality in general. It's that the stuff, you know, gets to him and then he's got to let it out somehow. How he lets it out is on the people around him. And Bill Gates is just this like money grubbing, lying weasel of a human being.
Ruthless. Like
it's like, all about the money.
Yeah, you're going to give me a signing bonus. And the old guy's like, I've never given a signing bonus in my life. And then Gates doubles what he offers, like what he tells him he's going to pay.
He screams as much as Jobs does, but he just sounds like a whiny little jerk. And it's all about business for him. And Jobs, you know, he cuts deep with his emotional bits because, you know, he's a deeply conflicted internal person because of all of this stuff going on, which they kind of really gloss over a lot in this movie. But I guess it's being a TV movie, you don't really want to get into that.
Right. Yeah. My So I've watched this movie in the past. I watched it with my wife years ago, and she refused to watch it with me last night in preparation. She was like, you can sit here, but you have to have headphones on. I was like, oh, okay. And her reaction years ago was like, I didn't know Steve Jobs was a jerk. Like, and Pirates of Silicon Valley portrays him as a jerk. And of course, there's lots of stories about like how he kind of was a jerk. And that's probably true to a degree. But I think you're right. I think it's like a... It's a very like A to B sort of relationship. Like things go crazy with his girlfriend and daughter, and he like gets in a fight at work with an engineer.
Yeah, it doesn't help that they go from scene to scene. Like he argues in the parking lot.
We have to fade between black. You know, it's like so you know time has passed. It's like I'm gonna say something great. Oh, it's black. Oh no, it's black. Oh. Next scene.
Got to get those commercials in there.
Yeah, but the character that really bothered me was Balmer. So
you mean Bender from Futurama?
Yeah. So I have in here, we first see Balmer. His first comment is about Playboy magazines and what young men do with Playboy magazines. And that's like cut to right after we see like Steve Jobs like dancing in India, having like a spiritual experience. So you have like Jobs, like this like hippie, like troubled soul. And then you have Balmer, who's like a jock, who's dumb, who's like a big oaf. And like, Balmer kind of is a big oaf, right? Like developers.
Yeah, but he's an idiot in this movie. Yeah, like the biggest idiot you've ever seen.
And Balmer, like, this isn't the show for it, but like, Balmer sort of screwed up at Microsoft in a lot of ways. But Balmer is not dumb. Like, he made some judgment errors, but Balmer's a super smart guy. Like, you don't get to run Microsoft for that long and not be a smart guy. And all throughout it, Balmer's like, oh, you need software to like make the lights come on, like. Oh, look at me. I ran to a wall. Like, what? Like, why? Like, it's such a simplification.
The introduction to the entire Microsoft team in this movie is just like, first of all, they're at Harvard, but all they're doing is gambling and talking about chicks and looking at Playboy and comparing which one was hotter. It's like, you're at Harvard, and this is how you choose to represent them. And Balmer is just the biggest, and not to mention the fact that he's an idiot, but he's like, The other Microsoft guys are just yelling at him constantly. Like, Balmer, shut up. Get out of here. What's wrong with you? Like, I bet he would have screwed up Microsoft intentionally just to get back at him for being dicks in college.
Yeah, he's like, ship Windows now. And he's like, what do you want from me? Like, I can't make magic happen. But again, like, that's sort of the problem with this movie is that it's very two-dimensional. Like, they have the scene where I think Woz is talking, because Woz is basically, you know, there's Woz is the narrator and Balmer is the narrator. They're both like the number two guys. And at one point, Woz is talking about like, we were young, we were doing crazy things. And it's a voiceover to when Gates and I guess Alan are, the kid, are driving like the bulldozers, like racing the bulldozers, and they hit Alan's car. And it's like, that's the only explanation we get of like Bill Gates does crazy things. Like,
yeah, he's a sociopath trying to explain why exercise is bad, speeding around eating pizza. And then he just sees two bulldozers and is like, hey, let's go for a ride.
Yeah, like he's drunk or high or crazy.
Just flat out like sociopathic psychotic. There's this person I wouldn't trust with a driver's license.
Right. But like, there's no reason for that. Like, and even with Jobs, like, there's a little bit of like, oh, I want to meet my mother and I'm a terrible father. But like, they don't ever connect those two things. Like, it's like, oh, I'm sad about my mom. But then that goes away. Like, we never hear that line again.
He hired a private detective that we'll never hear about.
Yeah. And then he's like, you know, kind of like a jerk to his ex-girlfriend and like, but gives a flower to his daughter, which is sweet. But like, that's like, you're just mad because like, you don't think she's yours. And there's no real like, oh, I'm adopted. I don't want my daughter to have that pain. Like, it could have been a single sentence, like, but you didn't say it. And so it's like these things are just floating in space and it's up to us to put them together.
And that gets back to the overall theme, just the way they treat Jobs. It's like he's got this sort of infantile response to things, but sort of kind of in the end, he does the right thing eventually, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, you see him like in his chair with his, you know, it's like Lisa is part of Steve Jobs' new family. Like, yes. And that's fine. And, you know, we know how that story ends. But even then, it's like, well, he has a new family? Where did that, you know, like,
right. Yeah.
All of a sudden, Noah Wiley looks like Steve Jobs? Like, what is happening?
No, well, I guess we're just going to go right into the end. But the ending really bugs me, specifically because of the way they took care of the Steve Jobs ending, where he's happy because he's not as involved in work is sort of the takeaway from that. Like, he's got his family life, and he's got Microsoft buying in on Apple, and so that's what it is. We get none of him coming back to Apple. We got a caption of John Scully, you know, at the toast. It's like three months later, he kicked Fire him out of the jobs. Company. Yeah, and yeah. so we don't get any of that stuff, which I think is a lot more interesting than some other moments they chose to highlight. And so we just get those two captions at the end and that scene of him at the podium muttering under his breath with Bill Gates overhead as Big Brother as we open right. the movie with Ridley Scott, you know, starting to do his commercial direction.
Yeah, which I kind of like the way they do the timeline of, like, he's showing the introduction and, like, the guy backstage, like, who knows who that guy is. It's definitely not how this went down, where he, like, points to Big Brother and then, like, points to Gates and Ballmer. It's like, this is the bad guys.
I did not like that guy. I thought he was cartoony, and he comes over and he's having this conversation with them, like, yeah. I know it was you guys who were evil, and he's holding this giant monitor when he's having that conversation.
Yeah, it's like, dude, your back would be breaking.
it just seemed like the strangest prop in the world. It's like, I know you're assembling these computers. That's not the point of you walking over and saying these things.
Yeah, it's they needed to do something complex in a simple way, like, hey, you know, you guys, you know, ripped our stuff off. Like, okay, so here's the fundamental problem with that scene, and we're jumping all over the place. Like, please forgive us, listeners. But, like, Steve Jobs...
The movie jumps all over the place, too, so it doesn't really matter.
It's true. Steve Jobs is on stage. Backstage, you're doing R&D into what your competitors are doing. Like, don't you have an office? Or, like, oh, guys, we have this backstage area. We should get some work done. Like, what... Well, that's not how things work at all.
Well, they just got back from Japan, and as you know from this movie, everyone is literally sprinting to and from an airplane at every given point.
It's true. Have you guys ever run to an airplane in real
no.
life?
No. Who yes. does that?
I did that.
Well.
In Orlando.
Well, Orlando's not a real place.
But this is just another way that they're trying to make Bill Gates look like a psychopath, because he's chronically late, he's sprinting, he... goes on that insane diatribe at the TWA gate agent.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, he would be like, I actually have it written down. Post 9/11 America, Gates is in jail.
Yeah. He would say, do you know what I have in my briefcase? And then he's in handcuffs and out the
door.
Yeah,
it's like, well, you're dead.
Do you know what a virus is? I go to the doctor, sir. Oh, my God.
It kills me.
Made for TV movie. Let it go.
It's that jokes. It's like, aha, joke about quitting college. Aha, joke that Jobs only eats fruit. Aha, joke that Woz hit his head in the airplane and, like, has comic book bandages on. like, I've been around people with, like, head surgery. That's not what it looks like at all. I will say, so we've been mean to it. I would say there is one thread that I actually like in the movie. I'm curious if you guys agree with me. So Apple, you know, famously goes to the homebrew club with the Apple One, and the guy with the Altair is there, which doesn't make any sense because those guys, like, weren't allowed at the homebrew club, I don't think. But anyways, he's there. They have the Apple One. People, like, flock to them, want to see the Apple One. That's a little overplayed. It wasn't as warm of a reaction. I mean, it was eventually, but not those early meetings. But they kind of go from that to, like, Jobs, like, they're founding Apple. You know, every time Jobs needs to get serious, he removes some facial hair. Like, he's like, I don't need a mustache. He would be, you know, allowed around schools then, which would be good, I guess. And so they meet, Mike Markula, which is great. Like, he's forgotten chapter of Apple history. And then, you know, he goes to some more banks and, like, you know, they're building things. And then they go to the 1977, like, computer fair, which is that scene where they have, like, three working Apple IIs. And, like, that's pretty realistic. But, like, I just like that little thread of, like, Jobs kind of coming out of this, like, hippie lifestyle into, like, hey, like, we have a business and I'm still a jerk and I still have all these problems, but, like, I'm kind of growing up a little bit. And I thought, out of the whole movie, like, it's not saying much, but I like that thread between those two kind of computer events.
I agree, except that we don't We get some of Mike and his interaction with Steve Jobs in that opening scene, but then we usually just see him as a background character for the remainder of everything. And he, you know, shoots some significant glances over at John Scully, and, you know, there's that stuff that happens when they're at that beach party, and also when they're at the 30th birthday party. But otherwise, he's sort of in the background, and we don't get any of the stuff about the Skunk's Work projects, where the Lisa was a failure, and they're, you know, Jobs goes to a building they have that's not on the main campus and puts all these people together on the Macintosh, and does that. We don't get that at all. All of a sudden, it's just, we have the Lisa, now we have the Macintosh.
Yeah, and there's pirate stuff, and 90 hours fight. A week.
There's a food fight.
Yeah, I was going to see how many 90, I meant to do it last night, so 90 hours by 7 days, that's 12.8 hours a day. That's a lot of engineering. Excuse me, software engineering. Dr. Drang says software engineers aren't real engineers.
No, going back to the Jobs arc there, I totally agree with you. That's one thing that drove me nuts in the Kutcher Jobs movie is there wasn't that sense of what's driving him. And in this movie, you do get the sense that he is motivated for whatever his reasons may be, and he's going to do everything he can to get to his goal of selling all of these computers and, you know, being a giant success, even when he has to throw away parts of his personality, which is, you know, his hippie lifestyle and his look and this and that. You know, he shaves the beard so he can get a loan, and he loses the mustache, he buys a suit because he knows what he needs to do, and he's very targeted in his actions to achieve his goals. And I definitely saw that in the character, and I really liked Noah Wiley as Steve Jobs. I mean, even, I don't know, maybe it's just me, my imagination, but even in some of the wide shots, like, he looked like Steve a lot.
Yeah, especially, I think, a little bit older Steve, like, you know, like that scene, you know, at the end where he's in the chair, like, and I shared it last night with you guys on Twitter, but, like, there's a Macworld 99, Noah Wiley actually introduces Steve Jobs, and there's an article floating around somewhere where people in the audience thought it was Jobs, like, you know, because it's like he's on stage and, like, you know, you're kind of far away, and they do look similar, but not in, like, the creepy way that I think really hurts the Jobs movie, where, like, Kutcher, like, really looks and especially sounds like Steve Jobs, like, that's super creepy. It's, you know, it's definitely, it's one of those things too, like, I don't know why they have to do that. Like, I guess a lot of historical movies do, like, movies about Abraham Lincoln is, like, a tall dude with a beard, I guess, like, a, you know, I guess you don't want, like, a redhead in a wheelchair playing Abraham Lincoln, but it's, I don't know, again, it goes back to my premise of, like, movies about your heroes, like, disappoint you, like, you know, and so it's sort of like, yes, he looks like Jobs, but, like, it's kind of in a weird way.
But it's not enough to look like Steve. It's also, I think, more significant to act like Steve.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen much of the Jobs film, not unlike Dan, who immersed himself in it last night. I think that Noah, from what I've seen, has done a much better job of capturing something, especially in the eyes. Like, he seems more, I don't know, crazy. And has that, you know, just sort of a very loose, but very focused personality, where at one minute he might say one thing or do another thing, but at the same time, it whenever it comes to something he cares about, he is laser focused on it. And I have to give, and I think that's partially probably why, you know, even Steve Jobs liked his performance as him. Was that he was able to capture that, like, not necessarily like every part of his face looks like Steve Jobs, but or that his voice sounds exactly like Steve Jobs, but just the his acting ability, I think, matched more what I would expect from somebody playing Steve Jobs.
Yeah, I think especially like the angry Jobs, like the you know, he he gets word that, you know, Microsoft's doing an OS with a graphical user interface. He's like, Gates, come down from Seattle. Like, you need to be in my office tonight. And Gates complies and comes down, and, you know, Jobs got his back to him, and he's like, you know, he screams, you know, like, you're stealing from us. That felt like that line and the line about from Gates about, you know, like, Xerox is the rich neighbor. You went in to steal the TV, and, like, you just happened to steal it first. Like, that, those two lines are some of the only two lines that actually feel convincing in this movie. Again, the rest of them are, like, chucking and jiving around, like, Apple history. But it's, yeah, you're right. I think it's an interesting situation, I think, for Noah Wiley especially. And the other guys are just, like, they're just kind of there, you know? Like, there's not anything really special about the casting, I don't think. Except Ballmer has no hair, which is amusing.
Yeah, the one thing...
To be that bald in college would be really sad.
I know people have been like that. But the one thing that... I agree with what you guys are saying about Noah Wiley. The one thing that I think he misses the mark on, but Kutcher really misses the mark on, is the charm and the charisma. Neither of the actors in this movie are up to Steve's level, and I don't know that there is an actor I can think of that would be, frankly. But they have the anger and the focus and the intensity, but the charm is just not there, especially for Kutcher. He has absolutely none of it. Noah tries, but he's not Steve for sure.
Yeah, I remember that specifically in terms of, like, turning on the charm. There is that scene when they go to Xerox, and the person who does not want to cooperate with them, he tries to turn on the charm for her, and it didn't really read convincingly to me. But that might also be because they immediately smash cut to just a bunch of engineers shouting nonsense. But right then, it just didn't sell it. Like, I didn't feel the charisma in his performance there.
Yeah, totally. And it's, you know, I think that's probably, I mean, I've never, like, even been in a play, really, but, like, I'd imagine as an actor, like, that's one of the hardest things to pull off, like, just that sort of vibe that someone gives off that, you know, that the camera definitely can capture, but, yeah, I agree. It sort of leaves you with a hollowness to the character, because Jobs was very convincing, and you see a little bit of that, and it's very creepy when Jobs... He's walking Gates to the office, and, like, the guy who looks like he's been hit by a car is like, yeah, man, like, 90 hours. Like, yeah, I'm loyal, Steve. You know, it's like you see some of that reality distortion field happening, but not at all like, you know, all the stories about Jobs.
Yeah, that was such a creepy scene, though. It's like he was like a cult leader, and probably most of it was the really weird music they had, and Gates's weird sell on, you know, you're vulnerable in spreadsheets and we can help you. It's just like... That was such a weird scene, especially when he's giving him the tour there. It creeped me out to no end.
I do worry about being vulnerable in spreadsheets. I'm going to talk to my lawyer about that and make sure I'm covered in that regard.
My favorite part of that scene is when they first get to Apple and they walk in the doors, and then Paul Allen's, like, staring off at the, like, Ducati bike that's in the front, and they're all, like, looking around at grand pianos and stuff. They're, like, terrified of the culture of the building. And it just, like, you guys just walked into the lobby. Chill out and talk to the receptionist. I can't imagine anything about that scene is remotely realistic. It just seemed like it was the director ham-fistedly saying, oh, yes, you don't have any culture. Which is, you know, yeah, something that Steve
Which
Jobs
is an
always...
actual line they said, too.
Yes,
of yeah. course. Yeah. And I thought about the Jobs interview, which I think predates this movie. Maybe someone in follow-up will tell us. But, you know, where someone asked Jobs, like, you know, what's the problem with Microsoft? And he's like, well, the problem with Microsoft is that they have no taste. And that which is, like, if you watch the interview, that's a very cutting thing for Jobs to say. Like, they definitely throw that vibe around, like, with Microsoft. Like, these guys are just, they're crass, you know, especially Ballmer. Is like, Ballmer talks about, like, women just throughout the movie in, like, terrible ways.
Yeah.
They definitely try to build that case of, like, yeah, like, Jobs and Apple, like, they have charisma and they have a cool factor, but they don't win, you know, and being cool and being artistic is maybe even a downfall, at least the Jobs.
Well, it didn't seem like the being cool and artistic was a downfall as much as his egomania, because in the film, I guess in real life, but whatever.
That's fair.
Yeah. Because, you know, Steve Wozniak is totally on board with most of the things, and then slowly realizes that things are getting out of control, and he wants to do the fun stuff and the, you know, like, jokey prank stuff. He's not really an artist, but he, I think, is the person we're supposed to identify more with as the audience, rather than Steve Jobs, who's going on this sort of increasing power trip through the film.
We're all supposed to love Polish jokes.
Oh, God. I don't know what that was about. And you said it was in the other movie, too,
it's
right?
It's in both movies. It's a plot point in both movies that Wozniak has his little recorder that plays Polish jokes to people who call.
It was huge.
Okay.
I didn't need that at all. Like, yeah, who cares? And you know, talking about, like, two-dimensional characters, I don't think anyone falls as flat in this movie as Woz does. Like, it's just, he's so simple. And so, like, you know, they're in the, after, I guess, the IPO, you know, when he's on the phone about the baby's name, and, like, Woz is like, I don't know what to do with this money. Like, it's so flat. There's nothing there. There's nothing behind those words. And, like, they hint at Jobs, or, you know, Woz was a good guy and, like, just wanted to make things and didn't want to sell them. But, like, that never... they've just vaguely kind of hand wave around it and don't actually come out and say it of, you know, Woz wanted to make things. He didn't want to sell them. He wanted them to be free. He wanted to give them away. And Jobs was the salesman, and you never get that relationship clearly defined.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating. Like, that's the thing. This movie is just frustrating because you know where they could go. So you know the story, like, we've all read the book and, you know, we all have heard these stories, and it's like, it's just flat, and it ultimately makes it hard to watch at times. Especially like I love Woz, like, and it's like, but Woz is not like this, like, dopey nerd guy. I don't know.
Yeah. I wonder how much of, Woz's character shortcomings in this movie have to do with him just sort of being an impenetrable interview. Like, especially at this time, if you would have sat him down and, like, grilled him on all of these details and what it was like, I kind of imagine him going like, oh God, I really don't want to talk about this. I just got out of all this stuff. Like, just, you know, the bullet points of what happened, you know, you can figure it out. You know, he was the salesman, I was the engineer, and I didn't really want to be in it. And then the writer went from there. It doesn't sound like Woz really shepherded them through this story.
His talking head is also in front of, like, a blurry classroom, which is weird. And, like, at one point he's inside a Macintosh because he's in a plane crash and his head hurts.
Oh, God.
So can we talk about the what do you guys call it in your industry? The third wall?
Fourth wall.
We got three walls out in California. I don't know. Like, it's uncomfortable, right? Like, at first Jobs is talking to you, and then the camera moves around. He's talking to...
Ridley Scott.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Fake Ridley Scott.
That's embarrassing.
It was played by J.G. Hertzler, who's General Martok in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. But continue.
Oh, God.
Wow. Continue.
And then, like, Ballmer they're in the room with IBM, and Ballmer, like, he's like, oh, guys, like, this is where it all started. And then suddenly the conference room is in a picture frame, and he's in some, like, futuristic museum. And then Woz is in a classroom that's sort of hazy, and then, like, he rolls back to a Power Mac and, like, teaches children how to play Odell Down Under. Like, it's just very...
That's what you can tell the filmmakers. They had these very specific, like, keystone moments that represent what the overall plot is going to be in their mind. That here's this this moment where Microsoft sells IBM on this, and it's where they made their fortune. And that's why it's the biggest deal in this movie, because at the end of the movie... Microsoft wins and are the richest people in the world. So this is their moment. And then the moment where they're showing the graphical user interface with Woz jumping around is because Apple invented this, and it's the way you all use computers now. So this is a huge deal. And these are, like, the keystones of the movie. Apple invented the graphical user interface. Well, not really. But anyway, and then Microsoft got massively rich and won. And then the Big Brother thing. And, like, those are the things that this movie thinks you should know.
But at the... Okay. Let's pick... pick apart these. The scene with Balmer bugged the crap out of me. Not just because he's talking to the camera, and everyone else at the table is frozen, but the way it all slides around against green screen is incredibly painful to watch because they're breaking perspective. Like the chair shouldn't go back like that, like through a picture frame that's moving upwards. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Leave it to the effects guy to pick apart the perspective. No, you did go to art school.
Well, does anybody else look at that and say, like, oh, well, this looks totally normal to me? Because it looks like crap. And it's not
a movie.
It's not just that it's a TV movie, but conceptually it's flawed. It's like, I don't understand why that needed to be there. Like, you can cut to him being in a gallery talking about it or something like that, but you didn't need to have him, like, slide through a painting. That it didn't make any sense.
So, too clever by more than a half, like 2.5.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
yeah. It's more uncomfortable to watch than, like, Steve Jobs sing rainbow music when he's on acid. That well, effect I can almost get behind, but yeah, you're right. It's odd.
This is the problem when the writer is also the director. There's nobody there to tell him this is a terrible idea and you should not do that.
Actually, there were two other people who wrote this.
Well, he got the written by credit. The other people are credited as book.
Oh. I thought they were credited. All right, never mind. But the... In the Woz one, it bugged the crap out of me too, because they go through the trouble of establishing that when he reaches up, he clicks on the menu, and that's a big deal. But then he reaches over, and he clicks on that folder that's there for some reason, which shouldn't really be there. And he's not clicking on the folder because he doesn't touch it. It just clicks, and then it like pops over to the side. And if you look at the bottom of the screen the whole entire time, it says hard drive on a folder in the bottom left-hand corner. I don't understand what the hell that's about. Yeah. It doesn't make it. The whole thing doesn't make any sense.
It's because they didn't have proper previs and they didn't know what the background was before they shot it.
And the original Mac didn't even have a hard drive.
No.
Well, and maybe like games, expensive toys, plane crash. Oh God, bandage. I'm in a computer. What's happening? Like the whole sequence just really. It hurts my
brain. You know what this reminded me of? It reminded me of the animated DNA character from Jurassic Park. They're like, hey,
oh
folks,
<my God.
laughs> check this out over here. That's exactly what I thought of the first time I saw this.
Dino DNA.
Exactly. I would not be the least bit surprised if an animated character popped up next to Woz. Like, so Woz, what's this all about?
That's amazing. Mm. I'm going to make this my Twitter banner image now.
Oh, my God.
It doesn't help that he's, you know, he's got his beard. He's in all brown. He looks like Sasquatch wandering around.
No, he looks like a jolly, like, 70s animated troll. Like, he's got the little beard, and he even does this little, like, hop and, like, clicking the heels together thing when he's in there, which is just bizarre. I don't understand anything about this. And if the graphical user interface was so important, why is every line of this movie so stupid about it? Because you have the scene where they're getting the chance to talk to Xerox for the first time at the Palo Alto Research Center, and they're just blathering nonsense. And then you get the scene where Microsoft is visiting Apple, and Alan makes like the most ridiculous comments I've ever heard about how it is a graphical user interface, and he's surprised because at this point he's already seen it like 3 or 4 times. Since they somehow got their hands on a Mac, Lisa. So it doesn't make any sense. I don't understand. I don't understand how you could say something is so important, but then like get it so wrong in the movie.
I have more questions about how wrong this image is that you just sent me. Is that the right aspect ratio for the Macintosh? Because I don't think it is.
Let's see.
This is clearly done in post because the perspective lines on the screen are leaning, but none of the pixels on the folders are leaning.
And don't pick
with
that
it.
Part apart.
I love you guys.
No, but like seriously, this is another thing. We were talking about how they got it wrong.
Yeah, no,
is that even the right size and shape?
Yeah, it's about right. Yeah, the Mac was 512 pixels wide and 384 pixels tall, I think. That's about right.
It was 4x3, but the problem is it doesn't, like you're saying, it doesn't actually have that bubbled out CRT dome look to it, because this looks like a flat image, which you wouldn't really see something exactly like this on a Mac. And I think at this point in the movie they hadn't revealed the Mac, so this is supposed to be the Lisa. So I don't know what they're going for here. Let's just file that under special.
Yeah. It was it was a 1-bit 9-inch CRT, 512 by 342. I think I said 348.
I wish I knew how to use Xscope right now because I'm looking at it and I don't know what I'm doing.
Dan, stop.
It's a different show.
Dan,
talk
stop.
Talk about workflows. It's just the I don't know if it's small budget. I don't know if it's a lack of attention to detail. I don't know if it's just like the writers weren't nerdy enough. But you're right. Like, anytime something technical happens, it's just like gibberish. It's like you took a thesaurus of computer words and you should have like shook them up in a can and whatever came out is what you said.
It's not as bad as Hackers, but it's pretty close.
It's true. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's
we skipped a couple of the Hackers parallels. There's the Blue Box, which in the very beginning of this movie, just like Hackers.
No, that was a Red Box in Hackers.
Getting free long distance.
Yeah. It was a big deal. The Blue Box was a big deal.
There was another one. Nope, that was the quote. There's the same quote they used in Social Network with, "The revolution is starting without us," because that's apparently such a famous quote. We have to have it in all of these movies about Microsoft. What was my other hack? Oh, there it is. when Gates mentioned that he rigged computers to get him in class with girls that he liked.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you do if you're a college kid in the 80s.
If you're a terrible person.
If you're a terrible... It seems like something Ballmer would do. Not, I mean, Gates didn't seem really interested, but Ballmer was all, like, talking about naked girls the whole time. it's odd. And, like, I guess kind of the last, like, big thing that really bugged me was the whole, like, good artist... Oh, God, I'm going to... mess up the quote. So I was like artist quote, and then I didn't write down what the quote was, and that was like 24 hours ago.
Great artist steal is all you need to say.
Yeah. The great artist steal quote, good artist copy, great artist steal. Like, Jobs just says that, and it's like, what are you stealing? Are you stealing from Xerox? Are you stealing from someone else? Who are you stealing from? And then, like,
well, he says it because he's standing underneath a Picasso.
Yeah, which, like, yeah, you just have hanging in your office, of course. And then Gates gets out of the car and he like sees the pirate flag and he gets the quote right, but he's like, who said that? He's like, I don't know, some artist. Like, you don't know a quote like that if you don't know who said it. Like,
my favorite part is he says, I think it was Van Gogh. To put it in there that he does not understand culture and has no taste. So that was a nice little finishing touch.
Can we talk about other things that I don't know if they are real or not? The thing where Bill Gates had a movie date with his eventual wife from another state, is that a real thing?
That's a great question.
Because that was a really weird moment that they threw in there that was
Melinda Gates.
Creepy.
Let's see where Melinda Gates is from. Oh, well, you're assuming that it was with his wife.
Yes.
She was born in Dallas, Texas.
See, they said Denver, I thought. So yes, that doesn't they make did. Sense.
Denver is not on her Wikipedia page, so clearly a lie.
Hmm.
Let me hit find some more. See if it works. Nope, not there.
The backstage showdown thing where this movie sort of climaxes where he sees Windows and they have their fight and Bill Gates basically just says, "Screw you, we're doing it anyway." Did that actually happen? Like, did they actually have a backstage showdown?
I honestly don't know. I mean, I know that it ended in like a giant lawsuit and it was this whole big thing. I'm a little ashamed to say, I actually don't know how accurate that is. I do know that there were at least some confrontations because Microsoft was working on Apple II software, on Macintosh software. Like, Microsoft was definitely around doing things, working for Apple as a third party developer. But I'm sure if it is factual, that it definitely wasn't so boring.
That was the one time where Steve was calm and Bill was kind of getting all worked up.
Yeah. It's just, again, the tone's all wrong all throughout it.
Yeah. And see, that's one of the strange things, though, is like when I was reading up on some of the things after I had watched it again and realized that maybe it wasn't what I thought it was, Steve Wozniak even thought that all the personalities were accurate but that some of the factual stuff was wrong. And so I thought that was strange, because Bill Gates kind of comes across as some sort of like cartoon nerd villain, and I wasn't really sure why that would be an accurate depiction of anyone, living or dead. And so that struck me as odd. And you know, he has some good moments, but it's like campy. Like he's not playing it as serious as Noah is, I guess. He's definitely a little more broad. Even when he's being quiet and nerdy, it's a very, very affected quiet and nerdy.
What is Bill Gates really? He's like a shy dude who sounds a little bit like Kermit the Frog. But in this movie, Anthony Michael Hall, he's got like the crazy wide eyes of somebody who just got caught for like storing dead bodies in their basement. And he's got this like creepishly soft voice and this weird kind of like penguin waddle walk thing that he's doing. It's like he's, yeah, a cartoon character is a great way to describe him. But that's like, I don't know how you play Bill Gates subtly. I mean, because he's kind of a subtle character in general, aside from his goofy appearance and voice.
No, well, that's why one of my favorite scenes in the movie is right when they, like, not the end where everything comes to a head, but at the very beginning when they first meet, and we get the clear delineation of like where the power is in this relationship, because Steve doesn't even really acknowledge that he exists, and so Bill is immediately deflated, and the way that Anthony Michael Hall chose to play that deflation is sort of sinister.
Yeah, they took that weird sort of like unrequited love, like you snubbed me at the computer fair and now I'm gonna like dedicate the rest of my life to screwing you, and it's like,
yeah,
that maybe we don't need to do that.
Yeah, and Alan's like, oh, maybe he didn't hear you, and he's like, yeah, maybe, and like looks over like sort of like sad but also sort of murdery at the same time.
He's like, I want to wear your skin is what the look is.
No, and it keeps coming up again, like when Steve Jobs is having his super shouty confrontation, which I think you liked more than I did, with Bill. Bill is being very quiet, but it's sort of like a cartoon quiet, like we as the audience know that he is doing something duplicitous because he's obviously acting like he's doing something duplicitous, but for some reason Noah Wiley's playing it totally straight. Like it's so strange. It's
the worst part of that is like when they're on the couch and after Gates draws whatever he draws on the whiteboard, which I don't really know what that is.
Everybody has whiteboards in their office, by the way.
Oh, you just erase other people's whiteboards. Like, let me tell you, I work in an office with a bunch of whiteboards. You don't erase another man's whiteboard.
Especially Steve Jobs. We've got stories about that.
Yeah, and so they're sitting on the couch, and you know he's like, did you read the interview a couple days ago? And Jobs is like, no. And he's like, well, you know, Aset is the only computer I'd buy for my mom. And he moves his glasses, and he's so clearly lying. Like, that's how he plays it. And Noah Wiley's Steve Jobs like, yeah, cool. Glad we got that behind us.
Like, that was the mafia scene. Like, that was, if this scene was in The Godfather, Steve would have acted just like that and just nodded at the bullshit and then just pulled out a gun and shot him in the head. Like, I know you're lying to me, and you're dead now.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely how it goes down in Silicon Valley.
Yeah. He leans over and kisses him. I know it was you. I know it was you.
That's what that moment was leading up to.
No, but the thing about that scene that really bugged the crap out of me is he's like, yeah, we're like a big family. Yeah, that's how I think of us, is like a family. Don't you think of us as a family? It's like, are you crazy? Like, who would buy that? Like, first of all, like, I can't imagine that was anything that Bill Gates ever actually said in any way similar to the character in this film.
He sees what he believes, though. I can't do the voice, sorry.
Oh my god.
And that's the only emotional tie to Jobs' past, is everything that he thinks is a family falls apart. Excuse me. You know, he thinks that Apple and Microsoft's a family. He thinks Apple and the Mac team is a family. He thinks that he and Woz are a family. And every time it's like, oh, I thought we were family, and now it's blowing up in my face. It's like, yes, that's how life is. But it's the only attempt they try to make at making Jobs sort of like a damaged person from his past. And it's, again, it's just so right on the surface, just no depth to it. Just, oh, we're a family. Oh, no, we're not a family anymore. That's sad.
Yeah, it's like if Jobs didn't have this checkered past with his family, he wouldn't keep repeating the same problems, and then he would be a genius without all of the conflict, and it would have been, it's so close to being perfect, but his flaws lead to him trusting Microsoft, and then they screw him, and then it's all downhill from there. But he eventually finds his family in the end, so it's a happy story for him, even though Bill Gates is the richest man in the world.
Right, well, and giant on stage behind him.
Right.
As Big Brother. But one of the things that really bugs me about the botched execution of the family motif through this film is that we don't get a clear sense of Steve Jobs' family before the film at all, really. Like, we don't know anything about his adoption. We don't know anything about the time he met his father, and things didn't go well, that he wasn't impressed by his own actual biological father. We don't get any of that stuff, and instead we're left with all of this other crud that you've already brought up. And in addition to that, the John Scully scene, which I thought was very on the nose, actually, at the very end of the 30th birthday party, where they're all talking about how they need to talk to Steve, and Mike Markula is like looking over at John Scully and saying like, oh, you need to be the one. And he's like, oh, I can't, he thinks I'm his, and then like trails off. And it's like, your father, his father? Yes, of course. Like, like that was not subtle, but like, we didn't get a sense of that in the film. It just, you blurted it out in that half complete way, and we filled in the blanks. And yeah. So I thought that was really not very good either. And I have to compare this to the Walter Isaacson book, which I read when it came out, and it's not a good book. And it's very bad. And for a lot of reasons, it is a very bad book. But it actually does a few things better than this film in terms of his personal life. And I certainly felt that it accomplished more than what this film set out to do with his personal life.
Well, it also has the advantage of being 400 whatever pages long, and they can go into depth of all of these things that you have to cut out for TV. But yeah, that's the stuff that I miss, and that's the stuff that I would love to put this story in the hands of a more capable director, and I guess take a shot. This is where I invoke David Fincher again, because he respects his characters enough to where I think he could do justice to this kind of story. And I hope he comes back to the Steve Jobs rumored movie with Sorkin, but I don't think that's the case. But all of the personal stuff is more interesting to me. The reason he is the way he is, not just the, we got to hit the bullet points of everything that happened in the Jobs 1 era, which is another reason this could be great for a sequel, Pirates of Silicon Valley 2, where you could pick up in 1999 and ignore everything else that happened. So we don't have to explain all that crap again, because we already did that in Pirates of Silicon Valley 1. Let's move on and talk about the Jobs 2 era.
Yeah, I have the same complaint about the Jobs film, the newer ones. Like, you spend a lot of time on like the things that are covered in this, you know, the Silicon Valley books. Like, move on to something different. And understand, like, Apple is like maybe the quintessential like American dream story, right? Like, you start in a garage with your buddy and you ended up ruling the world. Like, that's like every entrepreneur thinks that that's going to be their track. And I get that. And there's something very romantic about that, but it's like, okay, there've been movies, there've been books. Like, if you're going to be in that territory, you have to do it well. And what blows my mind is like, I think there are people going to be upset when they hear this. Like, people on Twitter, I think all three of us were like tweeting things about it as we were watching it. Like, people love this movie. It has an 89% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, and I think because there's not a lot of Jobs content, that like Apple nerds are kind of like defensive of this movie a little bit, because it's like, this is our movie, this is our story. And like, and I get that, right? And like, I still think that, which is why like I'm not going to watch this movie for another 10 years, because I want to remember it better than I remember it today.
Right.
But it's, you know, like it's just sort of this interesting thing of like, yeah, it's not, maybe it's not so good objectively, but it's our guy. And because it's our guy, we gotta stand by it.
Yeah, I totally get that. Like, I miss Steve. I really do. I miss the keynotes, and I'll rewatch old keynotes. I rewatched the iPod keynote after this movie, because that's where the Kutcher one leads in, and terribly done. Anyway, but like, I miss Steve, and you know, anything about that that I can rewatch, I will from time to time, because his personality is enticing and I like watching him as a character and as a human being. And yeah, we don't want to crap all over this movie and ruin people's memory of it, but yeah, this movie it holds sentimental value to a lot of people, I'm sure.
It does, and it's, and I get it, right? Like, and for some reason, the technology field, like, people self-identify with companies, and it's like, I'm in the Apple camp, right? Like, you know what? Like, I got a dog cow tattoo. Like, I get that. But, like, that doesn't excuse bad media or, like, bad movies.
Is it worse because people love Apple that this movie doesn't do it justice, or is it enough that they tried to tell the story and it's a little bit that you can look back nostalgically and say, I remember that time and place, or I remember my part in whatever that history was, and say it's okay because they tried to do something?
That's maybe the question, and I honestly don't know the answer to it.
I think that I side on that situation in both ways. Like, in 1999 me watching it on TNT with commercials and everything in it, like, I am totally bought into everything. Like, I think that's great. I think this movie's wonderful. Nobody's done anything like this before. It's amazing. I don't know any of these facts. It's wonderful in every conceivable way. And then now, watching it in YouTube on my laptop,
I'm in 360p.
Like, yeah, I'm like, screw this. Like, this is not what I signed up for. Like, this is not sufficient for me any longer. I get way better information from any other point in my life about Apple, about Steve Jobs, about Bill Gates, about anything. Like, if I want to know anything about them, I can find out about it. And to not do that justice, I think, is pretty lame.
Part of that might be the time, though, like we were talking about at the top. Like, in 1999, Jobs is back. Apple, obviously, is the very beginning of what would be a roller coaster decade of just, you know, crazy growth. But I think as, like, Jobs comes back into the public spotlight, like, the next in Pixar years, he was not as well known. And so I think maybe at the time, it did a better job explaining, because there wasn't that much out there to explain it. But that definitely has not helped it as it's aged at all.
Yeah, I wonder who their sources were when they wrote the book that this is based on, because who would have been that forthcoming about all of this during this period of time?
I mean, there were already some books out, you know, and there's a lot of people who, you know, Kotke and a bunch of other guys who were like, weren't at Apple after this. And I don't know if he specifically talked to reporters or anything. I don't think he did, actually, but there were a lot of people around. Like, people kind of knew how things had gone down. So I don't think it was all like completely shrouded in mystery, say, like the last 10 years at Apple have been, you know. Steve era one and Steve era two are drastically different when it comes to secrecy, which is why the Jobs book was disappointing to a lot of us. Like, I really wanted them to dive into this newer stuff and see how Jobs worked as he aged and, you know, on products that we use still today. And they didn't do it because that information just isn't out there. And maybe in 10 years it will be, but right now it's not.
Yeah. And I can understand, of course, like, at the time this was made, there was probably less information about the time because it was much closer to when Steve came back to the company. It was much closer to the events of the film. So people were probably not as forward about everything. But at the same time, looking back on it now, even for when it was made in 1999, it doesn't capture everything, especially not about his return to Apple. Which I think is a really big part of the story they could have told. Instead, it sort of trails off with he's happy with his family and Microsoft is contributing to the company. And it has nothing to do with sort of that upswing of, like, he went to Next and did this stuff at Pixar, but then they needed him because of Next. And then, you know, the whole thing with his relationship with the current Apple CEO, Gil Amelio, and how that all went down. For how he usurped into his position again as CEO of the company. None of that stuff is in there, and I think that would have actually been a more honest and telling... you know, you don't agree?
All I will say is a lot of these plot problems that we have issue with are in the Kutcher movie, and it's worse for it.
So you mean that it's not better because it's had an extra 10 years and change to get made?
No, I mean, they tried to cram a lot more of the actual happenings into it. We shouldn't be talking about that movie because there's so much to talk about there. But they tried to be more true to the timeline and the story and the people involved. And it completely glosses over, again, the stuff that I liked, which was the personality of Steve and getting into why he does the things he does. Like, there's no time for personality in that movie because it's just wall-to-wall with backstabbing and conflict and phone calls and yelling. And it just... I'm glad that they left some of that stuff out. I mean, the Skunk Works stuff is a little hard to overlook in this movie, but it doesn't do any justice in the Kutcher movie, even though that they tried to explain it.
Yeah, but okay. So with that, though, I feel like it does a disservice, though, at the end of this one to not state anything about how he got back in. And so it sounds like he's sort of in a zen state at the very end of this film.
Yeah, like he's retired. He's on the beach. It's like, no, like where you leave him off, he's at the very least at Nixon Pixar. They don't really say when that overhead shot is. You can assume that it's present day 1999. But yeah, it's like, oh, like we know he's back because he's on stage. And there's like, it's odd how much Bill Gates has aged compared to Steve Jobs, which is the opposite of what actually happened.
It's hard living.
But yeah, it's like what I don't understand. Like maybe you're supposed to intuitively know, well, he's back at Apple because I saw him, you know, on the cover of Time magazine, and so I guess it worked out. That's cool.
Yeah, maybe it just fit in with popular culture. People were aware of Apple coming back and the resurgence. They didn't have to explain that part because it was public at that point. But as a standalone movie without any additional context, socially, culturally, yeah, it doesn't make any sense the way it ends.
Yeah.
I did find a couple more quotes from Steve.
Yes.
He says he, quote, hated the movie, hated the script. He thought Noah was good, and you do look like me. That's pretty much the extent of what it says. And then he invited him to do the mackerel thing.
Right, which is, you guys should definitely watch that. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I've seen it before.
Yeah.
I was talking to the listeners. I'm stepping out of the picture frame.
Don't break the fourth wall.
Podcasting doesn't have any walls.
Yes.
We are definitely not hanging this podcast on a wall in a museum.
It says mind walls. I mean, I just had to look this up for a second, but like, I even remember like the infamous Wired cover, the Prey with the Apple logo covered in barbed wire.
Yeah, it's creepy.
Yeah, it's very creepy. But like that was 1997, which is the end of this film, basically. And, you know, it's like 101 ways to save Apple and all this stuff is in there. So, you know, it's not, I guess, for when the movie ends, it's not clear that they're on the upswing. But by the time the movie comes out on TV in 1989, 2 years later from this point, it's pretty clear they are not in as dire straits as they were in 1997. So that's... I guess it's just I wish they had continued more. So it does make sense, I guess. I was unfair to them that they ended when they did in 1997, that they didn't talk about the upswing very much.
Yeah, if I were the writer or director of this movie, I would retcon it to say that, well, this movie kind of acts as the first act of what happened to set everything up, and now it's going to fold out unfold in real life in front of you. And we're going to watch as Apple and Microsoft do battle yet again because Steve is back. Which is total bullshit, but that's what I would have said if I were writing this movie and tried to justify my non-ending ending.
Well, for the special edition, you can put in a new freeze frame title card at the end. And then that'll fix it all.
Can I put some more Imperial Walkers behind me?
What? Huh? What?
Hmm.
Bad Star Wars joke.
They all are.
Yeah, no. All right. Do we have anything else to say? I mean, other than we liked this at the time and then didn't realize how poorly it had aged.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of where I am.
Yeah.
To be honest, I think the only thing I remembered from the first time I watched it was the conducting classical music because one of my friends always used to say that when anyone would ever talk about Apple.
Yeah. I'm conducting classical music.
We should go have a bulldozer race. No, you know what we should do? For the people who like the movie and think we're being too harsh, and the people who don't like the movie, we should get them both in a bar in different t-shirts, and they should throw food at each other and see who wins.
Yes, because every bar owner would just allow that to happen. Macintosh sucks. Apple II forever.
That really bugged the crap out of me, because it wasn't even actually the way things had unfolded. I don't know why they summarized it like that. And they completely go from having the Lisa as like a plot point. Oh, it's his daughter's name. That's important. The daughter he can't say. And then nothing else about the Lisa. And then Macintosh. And then Apple II versus the Macintosh. And it's nothing about the Apple III. And so it's
Apple III is best forgotten, really.
Wait, was that Lisa scene? Was that the only one where he was really wearing the turtleneck?
Yeah, because I remember thinking, I was like, wait, that's early. He didn't do that yet. Yeah, it's strange.
They did hit a fair number of iconic outfits for him in this movie.
They did. There's a lot of sandals and bare feet. It's strange.
Ugh.
Yeah, and who puts bare feet up on a table, like, legs spread? At least cross your legs.
To be fair, he was asking the guy if he was a virgin. So, I mean, there's no rules at that point.
You think it was an invitation rather than an accusation?
Whoa.
This is not the way I choose to remember the dead. Please don't do this.
This is not no reflection on the actual human being. This is only Noah Wiley.
Ugh.
Disclaimer.
Ugh. Spoiler alert.
Have we beaten this bulldozer to death?
I think we rode this right into a car.
Cool.
All right. I think we end as awkwardly as we start. So
it's mm-hmm. That's really weird to me. I need structure in my life.
You guys, do you want to say? Do you want to say adios?
Adios. Yes.
Wait. I don't know. I don't know what to say.
Would you like to tell people where they can find you on app.net?
I accidentally went to app.net the other day.